Welcome, welcome, welcome. My name is Jan Desper-Peters, and I am your host of the BTSD Care Services podcast, Meeting You Where You Are. This podcast is a movement. It's a movement where we share factual and relevant information by inviting subject matter experts and people with real life experiences to share their stories. We know that the topics that we share are important because they affect your social, emotional, and physical well-being. The topic may not be relevant for you at the moment, but we're confident that if you go back and listen to it, at some point, it will provide great information for you to share and to be of assistance to others in the community. We have a great guest today, but before I bring her on the stage, I'd like to quiz you a little bit about our topic of the day. Our topic of the day is around human trafficking. I want to ask you a few questions. Did you know that the National Human Trafficking Hotline received almost 50,000 trafficking contacts in 2019? Just 3 years earlier, Maryland ranked fourth among the top states per capita in human trafficking cases. Myth or fact, all human trafficking involves sex. What did you think? That's a myth. Human trafficking is the use of force, fraud, or coercion to get another person to provide labor or commercial sex. Worldwide, experts believe there are more situations of labor trafficking than of sex trafficking, but there is much wider awareness of sex trafficking in the United States than of labor trafficking. Were you intrigued by that? Because I was. I mean, when you think about labor trafficking, you don't think about it in terms of the United States having those issues, but that is an issue around the world. And the United States is not exempt. So today, our special guest, Dr. Kim Gordon, is going to share with us her experience working in this field. And then we have a special treat for you. We're going to be sharing information about a free seminar that Dr. Gordon is going to lead in sponsorship with the BTST Cares. So when I was reading Dr. Gordon's bio, the first thing that came to mind was that Dr. Gordon is a unicorn. Jan, why do you say that? Because then I started looking up some facts. About 13% of the population in America is African-American. There are an estimated 41,000 psychiatrists in the United States, but only 2% of those are Black. And even a smaller percentage of those are Black women. So I am fortunate to know, call my friend, and have as my guest today, Dr. Kim Gordon. Dr. Kim Gordon is a board-certified psychiatrist and diversity, health, equity, and inclusion consultant, training, and trainer from Louisiana. After graduating from the Tulane University School of Medicine and surviving Hurricane Katrina as a Louisiana native, she elected to complete her general psychiatry and child psychiatry fellowships at Tulane. She enjoys dual appointments as assistant professor at Tulane and at the University of Maryland School of Medicine. She currently is working and doesn't stop working to educate doctors of tomorrow in the classroom. And she is a fierce advocate of health equity. And she's going to share with us what that is. Through her consulting firm, Bringing Health Equity to Communities, BHETC, she supports diversity, inclusion, and health equity initiatives for children, adolescents, and families. Some of the topics of interest to her and that she's done a lot of work around is sexual trafficking, juvenile justice, microaggressions, community trauma and violence, Black mental health, burnout, women's mental health, and the school to prison pipeline. Her leadership in these fields have been instrumental in providing mentorship, sponsorship, and leverage for many BIPOC psychiatrists. Excuse me, to develop educational resources, networks, and support to advance the cause of dismantling all forms of oppression and racism in medicine. Dr. Gordon, welcome to the Meeting You Where You Are podcast.
Thank you. That introduction was wonderful. I am so delighted to be here. I would say that today has been a day where we can really embrace what it means to have a National Minority Mental Health Month. I know that we're calling it BIPOC Mental Health Month, but whatever you want to call it, it's hot outside. We have a lot to talk about, and I'm just so excited to be a part of this effort to dismantle human trafficking.
Thank you so much for being here. It's so important that we have these conversations. I know that when I read your background, said you were from Louisiana, that you hailed from Louisiana. I was just wondering a couple of things. One, were you one of those little girls when she was growing up, decided that when I grow up, I'm going to be a doctor?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think I first wanted to be a writer and a singer. But at some point, I knew I was a still good singer and writer, but I started exploring what it meant to be Black in America. I mean, early on, I was privileged enough to go to some really good schools. And when I first interacted with people that were different than me, it was a challenge growing up in the segregated South. My mom raised all of her kids to value education, and she was a registered nurse. And so because she was a single parent and a registered nurse for some of my childhood, not all of my childhood, she couldn't find adequate child care. And as you probably know, the equity issue with women, finding child care is a big thing. And so she would have to, because she was a director of nursing, she would pick us up from school and we would hang out with her just for a little bit before she could finish her shift.
Okay.
And I remember her telling me, I told her I wanted to be a nurse like her after figuring out what she did. And she said, baby, I don't want you to be a nurse. If you don't mind, can you be a doctor? so she asked my permission. And so I wanted to honor her because I saw how hard she worked. And I said yes to that, you know. And so that inspired me to be a pediatrician.
Okay. All right.
So I wasn't thinking I was going to be a child psychiatrist. I thought I was
right. And so that was my next question. And once you decided that you were going to be in the field of medicine, then what drew you to psychiatry?
I want to say that I don't know if it was one thing that drew me into psychiatry. I remember distinctly going to Xavier University in New Orleans, and part of my curriculum was to do a psychology course and learn about abnormal psychology. And I was like, for the first time, like, wow, Dr. W.E. Du Bois' granddaughter was my professor. And Dr. Williams was awesome. It was the first time in my life I had seen so many professionals from all different walks of life, psychologists, biologists, chemistry majors, pharmacists. But her exposure to abnormal psychology really transformed the way I experienced some of the things that just wasn't clear to me why this was happening. I mean, it was a different world going to university and seeing some of the struggles that was happening in New Orleans at the time. You know, there was a lot of trauma even before Hurricane Katrina. So going to communities and seeing what their experiences was like really made it clear to me that I wanted to do something in communities and I wanted to get to know people's story.
That's wonderful, Kimberly. I mean, I know that when you are in what many people would call a helping profession, you have to have a heart for it, you know, because we deal with so many people and you have to be in a space where you really are genuinely concerned about their well-being. So when you started your company, Bringing Health Equity Training to Community, what were some of the things you saw maybe in your practice, in your residency, in internships, just dealing with people on a day-to-day basis that led you to this, you know, this space of wanting to make a difference as it related to health equity?
You mentioned earlier that I'm a unicorn, but I've been fortunate enough to meet many unicorns. And so in 2016 and 2019, through 2019, I was the president for the Caucus of Black Psychiatrists for the American Psychiatric Association. And of course, I've spent most of my career, my academic career, and also my medical career, working in communities of color. But it became clear to me that no organized group has really centered all their focus on equity for African Americans and people of color. And some of that is the way things were structured. And so we understand that structural racism exists. And, you know, it's not designed for people of color. And so some of the needs that we have are not being adequately addressed in traditional forms of healthcare. So in 2020, with everything that was happening in our communities, the public unrest, the COVID pandemic, and we saw the lives that were lost in the COVID pandemic. Many of those people are people of color, particularly Black individuals and Hispanic populations. It really set a fire inside of me to really address social justice in medicine. And we talk a lot about equality and disparities, but really our focus now is justice, right? Social justice and health justice. So in essence, equity is all about justice. It's not about fair or, you know, the equivalent services. Is about really evening the playing field for all individuals to have access to a good quality of life and well-being.
When I think about the pandemic, I think about how many lives have been lost during the pandemic, how our lives have changed, you know, even in a space where I used to do all my podcasts in person, mm-hmm. and now they're all, you know, virtual, how we have so many Zoom meetings that, you know, they probably will add a word to the Webster's dictionary that says that, you know, someone is zoomed out or whatever. And I also think that during the pandemic, it gave us an opportunity to step back and look at not only our personal space, but what's going on in the world. And I say that to say that the covers have been pulled off to this point where people, I don't believe that people didn't know. I believe that people maybe to some extent didn't care and just, you know, life just kind of rolled along. But when you saw the health disparities and the inequities as it related to, you know, pre-existing conditions and how this pandemic not only exacerbated in a space where people were, you know, testing positive at, you know, phenomenal numbers, but, you know, people of color were dying, you know, at phenomenal numbers as well. And so the space that you're in as it relates to health equity and inclusion and diversity is very important. And so I appreciate that, you know, in all that you're doing with, you know, training other doctors and having an administrative role at the University of Maryland and even seeing patients, that you're still, you know, wanting to give back in that way.
Thank you for that. I think, you know, many people may elect to do many things with their careers for whatever reason, but self-selecting to go into the communities that are most disenfranchised and have the most disadvantages is in my heart. It definitely requires a little bit of sophistication in cultural competency and also self-awareness. You mentioned that people just wasn't aware. I think that has a lot to do with where we are as a society. If we don't see the needs of people that's living right next to us. I mean, Baltimore City is a great city where you can see the difference if you drive a mile down the street in terms of how people live versus. But, you know, I remember when I first moved to Baltimore, I lived in an area that was really nice, but I had to drive down areas that wasn't so nice. Mm-hmm. And I just kept thinking to myself, do people see this the same way I'm seeing it? Because it was horrifying for me when I first moved here. I just couldn't understand how we could be so close to D.C., the capital of the United States, and have this congregated poverty. And then also see the resiliency and that empowerment of people who have all these disadvantages and yet they manage to pick themselves up and get up every day and go do their jobs and take care of their families and celebrate, you know, even through trials. So, you know, I think it's a privilege and it's an honor, but America had their eyes closed because of privilege. White privilege has allowed people to live in the same world and the same place that you and have a very different experience. And so I think COVID had gave us an opportunity to slow down. And really, in our slowing down, we were all glued to the TV screen and we were able to see it for the first time together, where some of us have seen bits and pieces of it. And some of us have seen it our whole life, right? And but you know, having your blinders on is not an excuse, right? And so I also work with, you know, allies, you know, white allies and people of color who are maybe more less marginalized than African Americans, to really say that, you know, forget the guilt, forget the blame. We're not interested in that conversation. But you have a social responsibility as a human being. Our humanity is at stake when we have these issues.
I think that you're, you know, spot on, especially as it relates to this concept of, you know, kind of being in spaces where people become invisible, because we just, you know, just as a metaphor, just kind of, you know, ride by them and go on with our daily lives. And that's a great transition for us to start talking about the topic of the day, which is sexual trafficking / human trafficking, because so many times we're probably walking past people who are, you know, in that situation, and we just don't know it. We just don't recognize the signs. And so I'm hoping that, you know, you just kind of talk to us a little bit about, you know, some of the things that you've experienced as a trainer, as someone who's worked in the field, and maybe just start out by, you know, I gave a myth versus fact and did you know, but in your own words, just kind of tell us what human trafficking is.
Yeah, so human trafficking, in my own words, is exploitation of human beings for monetary value or goods for service, right? It's the exploitation of an individual to minimize their humanity for the benefit of an individual. And, you know, human trafficking has been a legacy for American history, right? From 1619 up until this date, we have never managed to do away with human trafficking. It also is a larger societal issue. There's international human trafficking. You mentioned labor trafficking as one, and you also mentioned sexual trafficking. Mm-hmm. But any type of commercial sexual exploitation, even if it's domestic, meaning it's, you know, in the United States or in your city or community, is illegal. It is a crime. However, those victims who have been exposed or have been having to live that life are not criminals. They are people who have been exploited for the secondary gain for someone else. And there's a little nuance to that, because we understand that many communities, particularly communities who are struggling for financial resources, may also have connections and relationships with this exploitation because of the inequities that they live in and the persistent trauma that they've experienced. And so we have to understand that it's a nuance to it, and there's all kinds of conversations that needs to be had around making this visible and open up our eyes to a larger problem that needs to be addressed, particularly as it relates to young kids.
I'm glad you said that. And that's a great entree for me to kind of give a plug for the training that you're going to be doing for us. First of all, I want to say it's no charge and it's virtual and that anyone can attend. You may think like, how does this topic, how is it relevant for me? But just think about it in terms of if you're in law enforcement, if you're a healthcare provider, even if you're in a ministry at your church or your religious house of worship, then there are opportunities that you're probably presented with where someone is being exploited and you don't know it because you don't recognize the signs. And even if you do think something is wrong, there could be some language in a way that you can have a conversation with that person so that you can explore further what could possibly be a dangerous situation for them. And so I'm hoping that you will take this opportunity to get the wealth of knowledge and information that Dr. Gordon is going to give us on July 29th. I'm also wanting to just have you talk a little bit about human trafficking as it relates to Maryland. And if you want to kind of zero in on Baltimore, you can, but just want people to know that, you know, sometimes people say, this is not happening. I didn't think this happened in my neighborhood, or I don't believe that, you know, this is going on here. That's that happens in other places. But we're here to tell you that it happens in Maryland, it happens in Baltimore, and if you're not in those areas, it's probably happening in your state or city as well.
Well, I don't want to give too much away.
No, but not too much away. We want to keep the goods, but just a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think one way to think about it, because people always ask this question, hey, like, how, why do you think that's happening? How is that possible that it's happening here? Any place where there is a lot of trafficking, even drug trafficking, you can expect that there's going to be human trafficking. And we do know that we have an opioid epidemic that has persisted in Maryland. So that's the same individuals who engage in drug trafficking are the same individuals who will engage in sex trafficking, for the reason that there is monetary value in sex work. Right. You wouldn't imagine how much money is made every year. I think it's billions of dollars that's made just for trafficking alone. And we have politicians that live in this area. I hate to say that. Sorry, politicians. But we have history of people of power exploiting, you know, this service, this commodity of human life. Right. And so, you know, not to make anybody suspicious, but it could be happening right next door to you and you not know it. I think historically there's been this image of trafficking being a young white female at the age of 12 or 14, between age of 12 and 14, who was living with her two parents in her home, and she met a stranger, and the stranger kidnapped her, and she was brought into the life of sexual exploitation. But in reality, sexual exploitation and human trafficking can occur in neighborhoods where kids don't have a lot of supervision. And so they're walking down the street, some man or woman introduced themselves, offered them some help, and they could be still living in their home and their communities with their family members and being engaged in this, you know, this situation. When I lived in New Orleans, for instance, I would oftentimes see young people come to the emergency department. And sometimes they were coming with STDs or other things, or they were malnourished, or, you know, or they were just traumatized, or they hadn't slept for days and needed to get a good night's sleep and something to eat. And many times people didn't know or identify that they were underage because they would come as a young person. So I'm painting a picture for you to understand some of the signs, but I'm also helping you understand that clearly that can happen in Baltimore, right? I mean, Baltimore is a city, you know, we have, you know, football teams here. We have politicians here. We have a lot of people coming
to visit. Corridor. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, so it can happen. It can happen in somebody's in a church. Like, it's just human trafficking and labor trafficking can happen anywhere. Oftentimes when I say human trafficking, I'm referring to sex trafficking, but really labor trafficking everywhere. We have a lot of people from international communities who are coming here, who are seeking citizenship, who also are being exploited for secondary gain, you know, nail shops, places like that. There's a lot of opportunities.
Well, Dr. Gordon, I just want to thank you for being our guest on the podcast. I really would encourage anyone that's listening to reach out. We've been streaming, I guess is the appropriate word, the Eventbrite link across the bottom of the screen. We want you to register at event at bemoreaware.eventbrite.com. It's bemoreaware, www.eventbrite.com. And we're going to be talking with Dr. Gordon on July 29th. It's at 6 p.m. As I said, it's complimentary registration. There's no fee. And we just want you to be there. And we want you to tell people about it. There's this space now where people are putting all kinds of things on social media. Put something meaningful on your social media page. Go to our social media page on Instagram or Facebook. And it's BTST Cares, at BTST Cares. And you can copy and share our information so that more people can really get this information, because it not only affects children, but it also affects adults. And so, Dr. Gordon, thank you again for being on our podcast. Thank you for bringing awareness to this topic. And thank you for being our partner with your consulting company as we do all that we can to inform the community about the issues that impact us all. God bless you all. And be safe out there.
Thank you.